2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Toad into DFS pros.
Night Race edition of Tacos Fast 40. As always, we are brought to you by DFSArmy.com. Sign up today using the link in the description to gain access to our premium tools, which include the in-depth cheat sheet that's been revamped with a bunch of new tools and our Domination Station lineup optimizer, which is the first NASCAR lineup optimizer in the industry to take dominators into account. And that's such an important feature to have in NASCAR, so sign up today using promo code TACO to support the podcast. As always, I'm here with my co-host, Brady. Brady, how are you feeling about some night racing?
You know, it's good to be back on Saturday nights. Have a Sunday freed up for once. Generally, I don't like night races just because of how it affects the track, but I'm kind of looking forward to this one. It's the Kansas race paired with UFC 211 tomorrow is going to make for a pretty fun Saturday night, I think.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to talk about the track a little? I will say it was repaved in 2012, which is perfect as far as taking sampling goes back. So that's right about when the Generation 6 Car of Tomorrow started. It looks pretty similar to Las Vegas as far as the banking goes. And the average speed's pretty similar, just a little bit faster than Las Vegas at about 142 miles an hour. It's a 267 lap. 400-mile race on a 1.5-mile oval. What else do you want to tell them about the track?
There's not a lot unique about Kansas. It's a pretty standard 1.5-mile. A little flatter than some, I think. Progressive banking, so lower degrees of banking on the bottom groove, higher on the top, so there is a couple different lines you can run. Tomorrow it's going to be, you know, it's a night race. There's not going to be a whole lot of sun in the track, so it's going to be a cold racetrack. But other than that, it's a fast racetrack. They'll get up over 200 probably going into the corners on the start of runs tomorrow. But with all that in mind, it's not a track that's really conducive to a high amount of accidents. We talked about the incident or the DNF rate earlier. It's quite low for a 1.5 mile and 1 point for the circuit, or quite low for the circuit in general. So It should be a fairly predictable race if we do our research right, but qualifying also made things a little interesting, which we'll get into a little bit later, I guess.
Yeah, that kind of screwed things up, because I had set up this whole new part of the cheat sheet that had taken historical numbers into account, but it's going to be hard to use that as a predictive measure when you've got the field jacked up again, like we had saw earlier in the year with a bunch of people not taking qualifying. Now, historically, this track, this race at least, kind of hard to pass people. The lead lap will end up just around with like 15 to 17 people on the lead lap towards the end. So it's pretty much cookie cutter 1.5 mile racing, sort of similar to all the others, right?
Yeah, definitely. I expect we'll see somebody lead a huge chunk of laps off at the start. As we get towards the end of the second stage, we'll see some dicing it up. We'll see another mini dominator at that point, and then it'll be, you know, just a matter of who gets out, who has the best strategy, who's got the best car, whatever it ends up being. But yeah, I don't expect too much excitement during the race tomorrow. Hopefully it's an exciting finish though.
Yeah, and with it being a night race, we're gonna have more grip on these tires. It's gonna be easier to stay out in front. And How do you think the change with the lower downforce package is going to, is it change what we've historically seen with, you know, someone leading 100 plus laps a race? It seems like that's been the case at the 1.5 so far this season. But how would you, what kind of differences do you think will come into effect this year that we haven't seen in years past with the lower downforce package?
You know, that's a good question. And as far as I know, this is going to be the first night race with the lower downforce package, which is going to, I guess, adds a bit of uncertainty to it. But again, I don't think the lower downforce package had a huge impact on the style of racing we've seen. It's still, you know, the dominant guy gets out front and just ticks off lap, and then things kind of get crazy at the end. That's what we saw last year in the year before that, and that's kind of what we're seeing this year. So I'm not putting a whole lot of stock into, you know, this race is going to be super different because of the lower downforce package. But again, it is an unknown to consider that we haven't seen it at a night race, but I don't think it's worth putting much more thought than usual into it. I don't think it's going to be a huge factor.
Yeah, it hasn't really seemed to change racing quite as much as we expected it to earlier in the season. Now, looking back at the last four races here and how the fantasy scoring ended up coming about, like last race there was Matt Kenseth led over 100 laps, and there were two equal mini dominators in Kevin Harvick and Carl Edwards, with two punts being in the optimal lineup, and McDowell and Castle started 33rd and 34th. You go back to the spring race, the night race last year, and Martin Truex just absolutely dominated. Didn't end up winning the race. Kyle Busch won. He was the second mini dominator there, leading 69 laps. And there was only one punt, Casey Mears. Everyone else is in the $7,000 range or so. Kevin Harvick did start 26, so kind of a similar thing to what we'll see this year. And that's all I have the DraftKings scoring on, but as far as 2015 goes, and maybe 2015 doesn't quite matter as much because last year is the introduction of the low downforce package, but back in 2015, the fall race, Matt Kenseth led 150 laps with one mini dominator in Joey Logano, and then a couple of other people led about 20 laps, and then in the spring race, Martin Truex Jr. once again led almost 100 laps, not quite, 95 laps, with two mini dominators and a bunch of, once again, a bunch of like 20, 30 lap dominators. So it doesn't seem like, it's not like a Phoenix where there's going to be one dominator pretty much every time. It seems like the key here is to find those like mini dominators along with you absolutely have to nail the guy that leads over 100 laps.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, and there definitely is going to be a guy who leads around 100 laps, and we're going to have to do a little digging to figure out who that's going to be. But outside of that, I think it's going to be really important to find who those kind of fringe guys are, because if you go back through the last couple years, there's always been a secondary guy that leads like 70, 60, 70 laps, which I think it'll be a bigger challenge to find that guy, because that's probably going to be a guy who's starting a little lower in the order, and it's going to take them a while to get up front. So I have some theories on that, and we'll talk about them as we go through.
Oh, yeah. That definitely seems to be the case. I did add a new section to the cheat sheet, which takes all of the performances from 2013 and beyond, and it tells you, based on starting position, how many fantasy points were scored on average and how often they hit certain fantasy point marks. Like, for example, the pole sitter at Kenseth has hit 100 fantasy points 50% of the time, 30 fantasy points 100% of the time. And looking at it in five position segments, you start between one or first and fifth, then you are hitting 40 fantasy points 53% of the time, 60 fantasy points only 25% of the time. And it looks like the worst spot outside of starting 31st or worst is the 6th to 10th spot. Seems to usually be the dead zone as far as fantasy goes, but the 11th to 15th spot actually seems to be by far the second best spot behind starting 1st to 5th. So starting position seems to be pretty important, and it looks like not a lot of the guys in the very back do anything. In fact, only 11% of the time has someone started 36th or worse and scored over 30 fantasy points.
Yeah, man, that's I was looking over that earlier, and that's a really good metric that I hope we can keep up going forward. Unfortunately, with the way qualifying played out, I'm
screwed
not sure
everything up. That's not going to be the case.
Yeah, but Yeah, that's definitely something to note, is that definitely consider, like, that 6 to 10 area is 100% a dead zone for the most part. You know, somebody has never scored over 90 points starting 6 to 10. So, you know, it's very rare to get a dominator out of that section. So I think we really need to consider, you know, 1 to 5. That's where we're going to get our 100-plus dominator. We need to look at 11 or worse to get our kind of secondary fringe dominator.
And it holds true to form this year. All of the superior dominator guys are starting first to fifth. Four out of those five guys are just phenomenal looking.
Yeah, I agree.
And one other quick measure from that. If you look at the top six as far as fantasy scoring goes, so essentially your optimal lineup, 15 times has it come from the first to fifth spot. And the second highest on there actually is the 16th, 20th spot with 9. It's since 2013, there's never been a guy starting 36th or worse, and only once has someone started 31st through 35th and scored top 6 fantasy points. It's not going to be the case again this week, but something we should kind of quickly go over. How many dominators do you think we should look for, and how hard are we really looking at place differential? Obviously not quite as much as last week, where that's all that mattered, but compared to other 1.5s, is it sort of the same, or would you look at finishing position a little more this week?
You know, normally I would, but I think, again, the weird qualifying kind of forced our hand a little. I do think we're going to have to get into some place differential guys just based on the nature of the starting lineup this week. In terms of dominators, like I said, I think we're kind of looking at that 1.5 dominators. Like, there's definitely going to be one, and then one kind of mini one. From there, I think we'll probably need a couple, if not three, place differential guys. And then, you know, even based on that, I think we can probably fit in, you know, a half-decent play. I don't think we have to punt this week at all. And again, I think that just comes down to how weird qualifying was.
Yeah, definitely. And one last thing about the track here before we get into the picks and all. I've noticed that there are quite a lot of penalties that happen. Something they pointed out in practice was that the angle that the pit entrance is at a really tough angle, and there are 15 timing lines, I do believe, 15 timing lines, and a lot of people get caught exiting too fast. So does that change your strategy at all? I think it makes it a little more high variance, but since there's no real way to be able to tell who's going to get a penalty or whatever, do you just kind of note it, but just not really think about it too much?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot you can do. Kansas does have a really weird entrance to pit road. It's kind of right after the center of turns 3 and 4, and you carry so much speed in the corners of 3 and 4 at this racetrack. It's really hard to get slowed down. And then, like you said, there's so many timing lines this year that it's very easy to get caught speeding once you are in the pit. There is some... I mean, last year you could kind of mark Denny Hamlin as a sure thing for a speeding penalty during any race. But this year he's kind of moved on from that. So, you know, it's something to consider, but I don't think we have enough meaningful data with just 10 or 11 races, however many there's been so far this year, to say who's more exposed to penalties.
Only Reed Sorensen.
Yeah, that's right. If anything, it might scare me off rookies a little. But even, you know, the rookies this year haven't shown a propensity to be over-aggressive getting in and out of the pits. So it's something to consider and keep in mind, but I don't think it's going to affect my strategy.
I think the only change I'll take from that is I note that the guy pitting with the lead, he might pit a little more scared, and it might allow for a second or third place guy to just put up an awesome pit, stay right at the speed limit, maybe pass them that way. And that, along with the addition of the stages, just kind of adds a little bit more room for passing the guys up front, as long as it's not green flag. Green flag seems like the guy out front should just be in front all day.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it might add a little variance, but it's so hard to quantify it. I don't really know what to do with it other than consider the extra the variance.
All right, so I guess we should talk about practice a little bit. Are you kind of with me and not really caring that much about practice speeds? Because with the way qualifying set up with practice. We're talking about practice. With the way that practice ended up today, there were two practices, and it seemed like practice one, people were just kind of experimenting around. Practice two, the leaderboard, just right at the very end, it got shaken up, like, in a big way. You had, like, Truex and Almirola and Stenhouse out there as, like, the top three. And then they put their qualifying trim on, and the leaderboard just jumped all over the place. Would you kind of, or with people always going to practice speeds, especially at these 1.5s, that's kind of always the narrative. Would you consider fading some of the guys with practice speeds, since they don't really matter all that much, and since the 10-lap times, we only got 20 people even hit 10 laps, so it's hard to really, you know, take that into consideration much at all. What do you think about these practice times?
Yeah, they're hard to quantify. You know, there was a point in the practice broadcast where the announcer started noting we see people switching over to qualifying trim now. But the people started in qualifying trim, they ended, they in the middle they were in. So it's really hard to determine what was a more long run race setup and what was a qualifying setup. So I'm pretty happy ignoring, or not ignoring, but putting a lot less stock into practice times than I normally do. I am putting a little extra stock in 10 lap, just because we know that the 10 lap average was set with their race trim. But again, we're missing some pretty valuable information. Kyle Busch didn't take a 10 lap. Matt Kenseth, Dale Jr., Jamie McMurray, they all didn't take 10 laps, so it's hard to kind of quantify them, especially when Kyle Busch seems to be a front runner this week. He's a real question mark for me because he's underpriced at 9,400, I think. Well, I'll wait. I'll wait until we get into Kyle Busch before I go on that rant, but you're right. It's very hard to use practice times for a Saturday night race, because all the practices are always before qualifying. So, I put some stock into 10 lap, but you can mostly ignore the practice one and two times.
If anything, I think I'm going to use it to, like, specifically fade people. Like, people might not pick Joey Logano because he has quote-unquote crappy practice times here. He's 23rd fastest in second practice, but I noted right at the very end, he was about to put up, like, a top three lap and then got a little loose. Yeah. So someone like that I might be a little more interested in. Maybe, you know, Denny Hamlin or guys that just had really quote-unquote bad practice times when I know it doesn't matter too much.
Yeah, that's a fair play too. Yeah, I agree with that. But again, I'll reiterate that it's really hard to... I don't know where I'm going with this. But yeah, I agree with you.
Cool. it's nice that we're on the same page here.
I've got the truck race on in the other, so I'm kind of half... doing two things, and I just lost my train of thought. So
you gotta love some trucks.
Yeah, Kyle Busch is winning, so do with that what you will. If you can imagine Kyle Busch winning a truck race.
If they had a tricycle race, like on Thursday, he would be in that.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. He'd win too.
Oh yeah. So this week we're gonna kind of go through the field in order, because I think it's important that we start with Ryan Blaney. Like, what in the world do we make out of the pole sitter, Ryan Blaney? We're used to him starting second and just fading him for the most part, but Blaney's looking legit. Last time we saw him out at a 1.5-mile track, he led 140 laps. So I assume he's going to be the chalk. He's only $8,000. 33-1 win odds are starting to look pretty legitimate right there with Kurt Busch and Jamie McMurray, former winners. So do you think the time is coming for him? The dude had some fast practices. He's starting to look like a heavy hitter out there. What do you think about Blaney?
Yeah, I've been kind of a Blaney hater all year. But he keeps showing up. And if we didn't have the performance, it was at Atlanta or Texas?
Texas.
Texas. If he didn't do what he did at Texas, I'd be disregarding him wholeheartedly. But I think there's a really good chance that he can lead some laps this race. I'm still not convinced 100%. He won't be my top exposure by any means. But he does have a decent track history here. A fifth and a seventh, a 14th last fall with this package. So, you know, there is stock to be put into Ryan Blaney. And like you said, I think he will be highly owned. But I'm still not convinced. He's got some real sharks behind him. Joey Logano starting on his outside. Truex Jr. Starting right behind him. He's proved me wrong before, but, you know, it's still, for me, he hasn't shown me that he can complete a race. He's shown me that he can dominate a race, but he's also shown me that he can, you know, kind of blow it. So I'm 50-50 on Ryan Blaney. I'm not ready to go all in on him. I'm definitely going to have exposure to him. But if I'd be wary to put, you know, go too overexposed on him, but I wouldn't fault anyone for fading him, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. I'll either go with the field or a bit under the field, but it's a hard fade considering that with the preferred lane, he could just sit out there and lead the entire first segment. It's just the guys behind him are all very legitimate, and that's the real problem I have with him. Like, I wouldn't play him in cash.
Yeah, it's a risky play. Like I said, with Logano and Truex Jr. there, he could just get a bad restart and lose it right from the jump, or he could get a good jump and, like you said, lead all 40 laps.
There's no real way to know.
Yeah. At 8,000, he doesn't have to do a whole terrible lot to hit value. Well, I mean, in context, he doesn't. He needs to finish in the top 10 and lead 60 or 70 laps, but it's just hard for me to put a whole lot of stock into a driver like Ryan Blaney, who's only dominated once, and I'm still convinced that was an outlier. I don't think that's a consistent thing.
Well, we're about to see, definitely.
It's hard to pinpoint Ryan Blaney this week, just like it was at Texas. He was kind of an auto fade at Texas, and people paid for that. And I think we're going to see some higher exposure this time, but I'm still happy to fade him, I think.
Now, what about Joey Logano starting on his outside, and all of the guys in the top five here are under $10,000 because the pricing is just a little bit weird once again this week. $9,500 for Joey Logano, who's finished top five in six of the last seven races here. With the only one he didn't finish top five, and he probably would have finished top five in anyway if he didn't wreck. Obviously, like I said earlier, it didn't look good in practice, but he was about to put up that fast lap there. Been pretty good so far this season. Just Logano, I don't know, just starting on the outside kind of hurt him a little bit with the inside line being preferred here. Or does that progressive banking possibly give him a path to him jumping out on the restart outside of Blaney just messing up?
You know, I don't think the outside line's going to hurt him that much. I think more of the alliance they have might hurt him. I don't know how hard Joey's going to run him off the start, short of letting Blaney get out front, falling in behind him, and then starting to track him down, just so that alliance starts 1-2. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I'd be willing to put a bit of money that Ryan Blaney is going to lead at least the first couple laps, because I don't think Joey's going to challenge him that hard. That said, this is the type of racetrack that on the restarts, everybody kind of fans out. So it can get put three wide really easy, and if that's the case, then Ryan Blaney will be kind of a sitting duck, and it'll be up to Truex and Logano to sort it out for the lead. So it's hard to say, but I wouldn't put much worry into the fact that Joey Logano is going to be starting on the outside. I think it's probably going to play out pretty calmly, with the second most likely scenario being Truex takes them three wide. I wouldn't put much stock into that. I think Logano's got a good chance to dominate, and I think Logano's probably my favorite play overall this week. He's an animal at this track. It's probably his best track, or one of his best tracks for sure. He either finishes in the top five or he wrecks, and he usually leads a lot of laps doing it. He led laps on a 1.5 mile earlier this year. He's got a really solid quality pass on 1.5 miles, among the, middle of the road, but enough to inspire confidence. His average running position is 8.3, which is really great. I love Joey Logano this week.
I don't quite like him as much, because I'm going to kind of be with the field a little bit, go with our next guy here. Obviously the fastest in practice. If you were to bet on who has the best car this week, it's going to be Martin Truex Jr. Didn't get the pole. I wish I got the pole so I could just put an ungodly amount of money on Truex this week, but starting third, fastest in pretty much every practice, was by far the fastest in practice one, and practice two, he was fastest for all the way up until the end when everybody went in qualifying trim. Not the elite course history, or elite track history as Logano here, obviously, but he's improved quite a lot, especially at these 1.5 mile tracks where You pretty much consider him the god of all things 1.5 miles nowadays. Are you on Team Truex as well, or are you leaning more Logano?
My lean is definitely Logano, but I do like Truex this week. The one thing that kind of scares me off him is I'm such a mark for track history. I put way too much emphasis on it. It's a fault of mine, but I'm still going to roll with it, even though I recognize that fault. His track history isn't that bad. It's just he's never produced really stellar finishes
But he's led a lot of laps.
he's led a lot of laps, and then, like you said, he peters off at the end. But he has gotten better at 1.5 miles since he's gone to Furniture Row, and he does seem to have the best car at the track. But I just kind of get the feeling that even if Logano's car isn't quite as good, his ability at this track kind of gives him an edge over Truex. With that said, I'm by no means fading Truex. I'm probably going to try to go over on both of them because I do think they both have a legit shot to dominate this race. And I do think your winner is probably in this collective here.
And it's not the craziest thing this week to pick a few guys from the top two or three or five. It would be stupid to do that last week, but this is a place where people can hang, and you kind of want the people who are going to be finishing first, second, third, pretty much no
Yeah,
matter where they start.
definitely. I think your winner's probably coming from the top six-ish, starting in the top six, with a couple exceptions that we'll talk about, but there's definitely no reason to go with the place differential strategy that we kind of exploited last week. There's definitely an opportunity for dominators to start up front and stay up front at Kansas.
So you think Kurt Busch could win?
I'm not saying that. Take that as
Okay, so what about last week's winner, the guy we all shit on, just starting on the pole, had the best car, had the rear end of his car just jacked up. It didn't seem to matter. The dude was super fast. Won in the final lap, took home Talladega. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., the first driver in NASCAR to kiss another driver in the winner's circle.
I kind of ate crow on that because I was,
We all did.
yeah, but regardless, I'm willing to eat crow again because I think he's still, if you close your eyes to last week, he's an auto fade. And I'm willing to close my eyes to last week and still consider him an auto fade. He's a good driver, and if he was starting lower, I would definitely consider him. He has a decent track history. He's run decent on 1.5 miles this year. But starting fourth, I think his odds of finishing in the top five are quite low compared to some of the studs we have in the field this week. I don't think he'll lead any laps. He wasn't that impressive in practice. I know we're not putting much stock into practice, but I don't see much from that team that's going to inspire fourth place start. What I'm trying to say is a fourth place start. You have to do a little something to hit value. You need to lead laps and you need to finish high. I don't think Ricky Stenhouse Jr. will do either of those things, and even at 7,400, I think I'm pretty close to a full fade on him, and I'm hoping the field kind of puts too much stock into his win last week.
Yeah, that's probably the way to go, but I am starting to feel Roush a little bit. Like, I like his teammate. Greg Biffle died for this.
I do think Roush is on the upswing, but I think it's an upswing of top 10 potential. I don't think it's necessarily top two, three, top and win potential consistently.
Yeah.
Starting fourth doesn't give me a whole lot of, reason. He's got what is it, 75-1 win odds. There's
After
just not
last
a
week,
whole
too.
second. That's true, but Kansas is a different beast, so.
Oh yeah. With Stenhouse, the one reason why I won't fade him completely, 'cause I just do think he can hang, because in 2016 and 2015 he was very good at 1.5s. That was where he was the best at outside of Bristol.
Like I said, I'm not trying to put down Stenhouse at all. I think him and the Roush program has gotten so much better. But again, I think it's in a top 10 kind of way at this point. And as the year progresses, it might move because they are steadily getting better. But at this point, starting fourth, I don't see a whole lot of value with Ricky Stenhouse.
Yep, pretty much. So on to starting fifth, Kyle Busch. He was the fastest in final practice. Very good track record here. Five or four straight top fives. How do you feel about Kyle Busch after? I mean, he did well last week, but that really doesn't matter. as far as this week is concerned, and really he's only had 16 fast laps on 1.5 mile tracks this year. That's not great.
No, it's not. And I've been saying this week after week that Kyle Busch is going to win a race and that Joe Gibbs has to turn it around, and it doesn't seem like they have yet. That said, he looks strong so far this weekend for whatever you can put into that. Good qualifying, good practices. He's walloping the field in the truck race right now as we speak.
Three-time defending champion here at Xfinity.
Yeah, but he struggled in Cup at one point in his career, but he seemed to turn that around. He won this race last year. I'm not afraid to play Kyle Busch at a pretty high clip this week. I think he's
so
gonna
cheap.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. I mean, DraftKings really are overcompensating for his lack of performance compared to last year.
The dude almost won, and it goes down. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but he's hard to fade at that price. And like I said, I'm not put off by his performance at 1.5 miles. Kyle Busch is a great race car driver, and Joe Gibbs is a great organization. Even with a decent car, Kyle Busch can compete for a win, and I think he has at least a decent car this week. So happy to play Kyle Busch. He's probably in my top five plays this week, which should come as no surprise. I kind of tote him every week, but I kind of see him as close of a lock for a top five as you can get. He always ends up in the top five as long as he doesn't face issues, and he doesn't face issues a lot. So happy to play Kyle Busch at go over on him anyway.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. He's just too cheap. I'm going to let you take his brother here because I have no interest whatsoever at Kurt Busch starting sixth.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of interest in Kurt Busch either. I don't know why I said top six. I just picked it out of the air. Kurt Busch has just been nowhere since Daytona. I don't know if they're experimenting or what's going on with him. He has a fine track history, I guess. It's actually a little better than his brother's in context. And his stats on 1.5 miles are actually kind of similar to his brother's as well. With that said, I just don't see anything from the 41 team this year that gives me confidence that he can compete for a win this week or even get a top five. I think he's probably a top 10 guy this week, but if we're trying to win GPPs, that's not going to do it. If we're trying to win cash games, I think there's some obvious cash plays that make him worth ignoring. So I don't know if I'd say full fade, but I probably will. What I do with Stenhouse, I'll probably do with Kurt Busch. I guess that's probably a good way to put it.
Well, he's starting off this zone that we've already established is really bad at putting up fantasy points.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that he's just been so poor in 2017 outside of his Daytona wins kind of just puts emphasis on that.
And starting right after him, Kurt Busch, another guy I'm not really interested in, even though at this price I should be interested in him, he's just not very good this year, it looks like. Denny Hamlin, starting seventh, has just looked miserable at 1.5 miles so far this year. Only a 69 driver rating, giggity. 18th place average running position. I just have no real interest in whatsoever. He's in like the worst possible spot to start.
Yeah, the only interest I have in Denny Hamlin is kind of from a game theory perspective as a pivot.
He will be low owned.
Yeah, and it's a great driver in a Gibbs car, so you can't ignore him completely. But I mean, this is kind of a perfect storm of bad in terms of DFS. He's starting in that dead zone. He's looked poor on this style of track this year, and his driver rating here at Kansas is kind of abysmal. So, like I said, I like it as a pivot off those kind of the bee's nest in front of him, but as a pure play, I don't see him with a high potential to win this race. The one thing that does give me pause about it is he had the third quickest lap, or the third quickest 10-lap average, which gives me a little confidence, but again, starting sixth or seventh is kind of that dead zone. Like I said, it's kind of a perfect DFS storm of awfulness.
We'll have to see if anyone really talks about him. We did see him as a very chalky option a few weeks ago, so maybe that's enough for me to not really care about him. People still see, hey, it's a Gibbs car in the 8,000s. Why not pair him with Kyle Busch?
Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
Now, someone in this range who absolutely can ball here, Kevin Harvick, 10,400, pretty expensive, but it's kind of worth it. He has five top two finishes here. in the last seven races. Outside of Phoenix, this might be one of his best tracks. This year, he's led by far the most 1.5-mile laps, with him obviously dominating Atlanta. Led 369 laps. And his Kansas stats obviously are off the charts, with him just dominating year after year. With him starting 8th, and a bunch of heavy hitters in front of him, do you have as much interest as you ought to be, considering his track history?
I don't know, man. The only thing that's scaring me off Kevin Harvick is he's in that dead zone that we talked about. And his price. He's probably appropriately priced, but I still think he's overpriced just because it makes it tough to play him, and I want to play him so much. He's just an animal at Kansas, and kind of the opposite of what we just talked about with Denny Hamlin. It's kind of a perfect storm of goodness in terms of DFS. He's been, you know, unstoppable on 1.5 miles, even though he hasn't won this year. He's just ticked off laps and fast laps. He's got a stellar track history, one of the best track histories you'll see at any track of any driver. And has an average lap led here of 58.3, which is staggering. But like you said, he's in that dead zone. Can he be an outlier to the research we talked about earlier? Sure. But it is enough to give me a little concern about him. We'll have to get a feel for what the field is going to do with him, because I'm happy to probably play him at field percentage or a little over. But it is going to be tough, man. He's got to go through Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, Truex Jr., Logano, and he's competing with Larson and Elliott off the jump. It's going to take a lot of car to get by those guys, and I think he probably has a top two car this week. So it's just a matter of how much he has to use up to get to the front.
Yep, right on. I'm kind of right there with you. I would play him if he was like starting either in the top five or like 12th or worse. Just starting here, it's really hard to see him. He hasn't really been one to fight through traffic. He's been one to take the pole and just sit there for a large amount of the race.
Definitely. His quality passes on 1.5 miles in 2017 is very low, and that's because exactly what you just said. He either starts on the pole and stays in front, or he starts 8th and stays in 8th. So that's one thing to consider with Kevin Harvick, is he hasn't been passing cars this year. He's either fast or he's as fast as he should be and stays in the right position.
Yep. So moving along to Larson, and we'll kind of hurry up through this little range because it's not that interesting. Larson has not looked very good here at all in the last three races. All pretty bad finishes, but he did finish 2nd here in the fall race of 2014. Obviously, this is the best season of his career, and at the 1.5 mile tracks, he's been just as dominant as anywhere else, although he has yet to lead a lap. Starting in 9th, I guess it's sort of interesting, but it's you can't really just pick everyone up here, and I don't really have a whole lot of interest in Larson with his 2nd fastest in practice 2. I think people kind of beyond him a little more than they ought to, and I'm just not really feeling it this week.
Yeah, I think you just put it in a great way. It's not that I dislike Larson. It's just that we can't play everybody up here, and I think he's probably on the lower echelon of plays that we've talked about so far. Pretty unremarkable track history. Has been good on 1.5 miles, but I think the field's catching up to him. I think they had a clear advantage at the start of the season that he's kind of lost a little. That's not to say he can't compete for a win. I just think the odds of it are a lot lower than some of the other guys starting in front of him, and I think his odds to dominate are even lower than that. So the only way I like him is kind of in the same way I like Denny Hamlin, maybe a pivot, but I think he'll probably go a little over-owned anyway in lower-dollar tournaments just based on people game log watching.
Exactly. So 1-2, 1-2-2.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think he's a great pivot either. So not a whole lot of interest in Larson this week.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to do either a full fade, or I think I'm going to full fade Larson. Hold me to it. I'm not going to play a single share of Larson. If that's what kills me, then that's what kills me. But I'm more interested in $800 cheaper at 9,100. Chase Elliott is starting 10th. I think everyone is going to forget about him because when's the last time you've seen Elliott on the broadcast, like at all? When have they paid attention to Elliott? He's just kind of been chilling lately, but he's so awesome at these 1.5 miles. Like, this is his bread and butter.
Yeah, definitely. He's kind of been mired in that 8 to 12 zone running position the last couple of weeks and hasn't been paid much mind. But you are right. He is really good at 1.5 miles. He's run decent on 1.5 miles so far in 2017. His Kansas stats are brief but decent. Average running position of 13.5, which is probably a little higher than it will end up being over the next couple of years. But I'm not. I kind of feel the same way as I do with Larson. It's just kind of that thing of we can't play everybody up here. Again, I think he's probably a decent pivot. He'll probably go a little lower owned than Larson. He is a little cheaper than Larson. But again, it comes down to I don't think he has a good a chance to lead laps. And win the race as some of the guys that's starting in front of him that I like a little bit more. And when you can get Kyle Busch for $300 more, you really have to consider him as a pure pivot. And I don't think he's a great pivot, but it depends on your strategy, I think.
I think, well, like my prediction with Elliott is maybe he doesn't lead any laps, but he's gonna finish like third.
Yeah, I can definitely see that happening, but I can also see him kind of doing the same thing he's done the last couple of weeks and finishing 8th to 12th and being unremarkable. So it's hard to say what he's going to end up doing.
The stat I'm looking at the most when it comes to Elliott is his late run speed, which is better than everyone that we've talked about so far in this podcast, and better than everyone in the field outside of Brad Keselowski. And with this being such a low caution, kind of green flaggy race, I think that's where the advantage for Elliott comes into play.
Yeah, that's definitely a good thing. It's definitely relevant to point that out. I think there is a good chance that he probably could tick off some positions at the end of the race. Yeah, and if he finishes third, then I think what does that put him? That puts
Over about
around.
60
Oh,
points, depending on the fast laps he gets, yeah.
yeah. So that's definitely potential to be in the optimal, even if he doesn't lead laps and he can tick off a couple fast laps and finish in the top three. So. Yeah, it just kind of depends what you think of Chase Elliott as a whole. Didn't look that great in practice, but again, we're not putting a lot of stock into practice. So I'm kind of leaning toward the under, but I can see your point of why he could be valuable this week.
Austin Dillon starting 11th. He has good track record here. Sixth place finish in both races last year, but I don't really buy it. He's not looked very good this year at all, like whatsoever.
Yeah, any time that Austin Dillon appears so far this year, it's not on 1.5 miles. He's been really abysmal on 1.5 miles, and that kind of rings true of the entire RCR collective outside of maybe Ryan Newman, who's looked a little better, but with an average running position of 22.7, starting, what's he starting? 11th, yeah, that's what we're talking about, right? Yeah, I'm probably a full fade on Dylan.
Pretty much right there with you. Not that interesting of a play. On to Kyle Larson's teammate, Jamie McMurray. And well, I want to ask you a quick question real fast. Both Larson and McMurray spun out in first practice. With them being teammates and the only two guys on the team, do you care about that at all?
Not really. That's just a matter of guys trying to figure out what the limit is in first practice, and they're one of the only guys in the field that figured out what the limit is because they went over it. So, no, there's not a whole lot to look into there. The only thing to note is that Kyle Larson is in his secondary car. They had to go to a backup, but it turns out his secondary car is probably as fast as his primary. So, but regarding Jamie McMurray, he's had some real trouble at Kansas so far this year. But with that said, he's looked fairly decent at 1.5 miles so far this year. So I think he's worth kind of a look, at least matching the field on, because he has been quick. He has pretty impressive quality passes on 1.5 miles, and he's such an aggressive driver. And aggressive driving really suits nighttime races because there is so much grip and you do have the potential to make those big moves and not pay for them. So I do have a little interest in Jamie McMurray. I don't see him as a winner of this race, but I kind of think he can, kind of in the same way you were talking about Chase Elliott, kind of seems like he can sneak into the top seven and top six pretty easily. And with a low, not low variance, but with a track where we're not putting a whole lot of stock into place differentials for certain parts of our lineup, I think he is a valuable play.
Yeah, the dude just seems to be in the top 10, top seven pretty much all year, like every race. He's just... He hasn't fallen back like he usually does, and he really hasn't qualified low. He's kind of been here, and the only thing that makes him... Like, I wanted to play McMurray more than I'm going to with his really bad-looking track history and all. Wanted to play him a lot more, but starting 12th, that really caps his upside, 8,100.
Yeah, the only thing that does is probably pushes his ownership down a little, and that's the reason why I'm saying go over on him, because I don't think he'll be high-owned anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's still valuable to go over on him, but like I said, I wouldn't go over, I don't know, 18 or 19, probably.
Yeah, but he probably won't kill you if you fade him either, because he's not going to win.
Yeah, that's right.
Eric Almirola, 6,400. This dude has been looking awesome lately, and it turns out it's because he's a cheater. Big cheater. Failed the post-race inspection last week.
By the third of a size of a credit card.
Yeah, just barely. So he's a very, very small cheater, but he's still a cheater.
A cheater nonetheless.
But he looked very good in practice. Was up there in the top three right until the very end. He's really just come on recently. Like, 8 lead lap finishes in 11 races. That's pretty awesome for a guy that's 6,400. He started up high the last few weeks with him being in a fast car and qualifying high, but he really has not fallen back down the field. He's been pretty rock solid, and if you think long term, he's definitely not showed it this year at all, but long term, Almirola is really good at these 1.5, kind of similar to how Stenhouse is. Is there any interest for you with him being at such a low price, or does that 13th place starting position kind of scare you off of Almirola?
It kind of scares me off a little, especially considering I don't think we need a guy in this range based on how qualifying played out. I know we keep saying that, and we'll talk about it later, but...
There are probably higher upside plays down further.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we need to take the risk with Almirola. He doesn't have an opportunity to lead laps. He's not going to win the race. Best case scenario for him is, what, 8th or 9th? Which would put him at maybe
40
points, yeah, 50 points maybe.
Yeah,
I think that's, you know, a long shot best case scenario. So I don't have a lot of interest in Eric Almirola.
Yeah, it's not a plate race.
Yeah, exactly.
Matt Kenseth starting 14th. He is right there with Harvick, 57 average laps led. So he's dominated here before. Most recently won back in 2013, but no finish worse than 14th. In the last 8 races since the repave. Starting 14th isn't too bad. We did point out earlier that this range has been kind of a really nice range to start in. Are you interested in Matt Kenseth at all? I mean, he looked pretty good in both practices, but compared to the other, you know, JGR studs and whatever, his Vegas odds are a bit down there at 16-1, where everyone else is like 6-10-1.
Yeah, man. Definitely interested in Matt Kenseth. 16-1 odds, like, I'm getting my wallet out right now because those are great odds. Matt Kenseth is an animal like Kansas. He gets around this track so well. He's got great quality pass stats so far in 2017, even though he's been kind of unremarkable. But starting at 14th, I think he's probably a pretty good odds to get a top five, despite what Vegas might think. And a top five is probably enough to do it for us. So I really like Matt Kenseth this week. I think he'll probably go under owned just because of how miserable he's been so far this season. But I think we can look past that. I think that has more of is a JGR thing than a Matt Kenseth thing. And I think JGR is kind of getting past their slump. And I know I say that every week, but every week Matt Kenseth shows us a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And I think this is kind of the week that they're going to put it all together. And I think he's going to have a really, really solid run.
I agree with you. We have seen a lot more from Kenseth, but it's been at these really short tracks and last week's plate race. The problem I see with him is that he has like no fast laps at all this year, and that's so crucial to DraftKings scoring.
Yeah, he's not a guy that seems – he's kind of that Jimmy Johnson. You know, he doesn't lead a whole lot of laps on the way to winning the race. I kind of see the same thing with Matt Kenseth, but starting 14th is enough for me to put some stock into that theory. So I wouldn't go crazy with Matt Kenseth, but I'm not offended by going over on Matt Kenseth, especially when he's $8,400. I mean, that's a steal.
Oh, man, we need to hurry along here. It's going to be a two-hour pod.
We're getting to a group of drivers we can kind of just gloss over here. So
yeah, sorry to the guys trying to hurry here, but you're welcome to the guys on long road trips. Daniel Suarez at 15th, not interested.
No, there's not enough there. He hasn't shown anything this year. Like I said before, he'll get better, but just he's an auto fade for the near future anyway.
Bain starting 16th. Kind of interested. I like the play a lot.
Yeah, a little bit. But again, I go back to the thing of what's the best case scenario. A top 7 maybe is long shot best case scenario.
Yeah, but 7,100, you don't need too much, and that'll do you. But with the lack of crashes, he's going to have to get around the likes of Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, which should be pretty tough.
Yeah, it's going to be tough sledding without a wreck fest. I don't think we're going to see one at a night race in Kansas. So I wouldn't say full fade on Bain, but I wouldn't.
More than Stenhouse.
Yeah, but still wouldn't go crazy.
By far the most expensive player in the field, Brad Keselowski at 10,700. He's starting 17th, which is pretty darn good for him, and he's been the best, right there with Harvick. As far as 1.5 miles go, lots and lots of fast laps, 123 fast laps in 3 races. Got to be very interesting here. He's been probably the best driver this year outside of Larson, and a lot of Larson might have just been his team getting an edge early on, but like Penske has looked like the best team in all of NASCAR. His track history here isn't anything great. He rarely finishes in the top 5. He hasn't finished in the top 5 since the repave. Does that kind of scare you off a little bit, or do you like some Keselowski this week with his price being so high and his ownership probably being a little lower than it should be?
Yeah, I like Keselowski, but I'm with you. Like, I don't necessarily know what to make of his ownership. I don't know if it's going to be high, or I really have no idea what to think.
It won't be much because of Jimmy Johnson being kind of a must play at 10-1.
Yeah, that kind of group of guys, I think he'll probably go under-owned due to a number of factors. But again, his track history is unremarkable, and I'm a slave for track history. So I don't have a whole lot of interest in Brad Keselowski, but I do think, depending on what strategy you're going with, he is probably the best pivot on the field if you believe that his ownership is going to be low. Because at 17th, that's not far back enough to get up front quickly and dominate this race. He's done it at 1.5 miles in 2017, so we know he can do it. He had a fast enough car, and we know his teammates have really super fast cars, talking about Logano and Blaney. So the only reason to be worried about Kev this week is his track history, which is unremarkable, but everything else about him is remarkable. So it just kind of depends on how you want to attack the slate with the way qualifying played out.
Yeah, and his price being a little egregious too, but that'll only really help with the ownership. I do like him as a pivot play, but I don't know if I'd put like a lot of stock into him. And that's kind of the play there if you really do believe in him. If you want to get overweight on the field with him, it's going to be a pretty hefty investment. Yeah. Paul Menard starting 18th, not a whole lot of interest until you look at that track history. Wait, my bad. Never mind. I was looking at Ryan Newman's. Yeah, not interested. Sorry. I thought there was a reason to like Menard. Hold on. No, not really.
The only reason I would like Menard is his finishes have been bad, but a lot of them have to do with problems he's had. His running, he's run quite well here. His average running position is 15th, which is probably on the higher end for Paul Menard. And at 6,600, doesn't have to do a whole lot. But that said, I don't think he'll do a whole lot. I think he's probably locked in at that 15 to 18 range, start and finish. So not a whole lot of interest. Feel free to sprinkle him in or match the field on him at like 10 to 13%, but not a whole lot of interest. I don't think he's a game changer this week.
Yeah, let me move on to my mini boyfriend here in the slate, Ryan Newman, 7,600. Awesome track history. Not like the top five finishes, but six straight top 12 finishes here. Starting 19th, with everyone being attracted to Kasey Kahne in this range, starting a bit lower in the field. I think Newman is a true pivot off of some of these guys that are going to be chalky starting down low.
Yeah, I agree. I think the chances of Newman being the optimal are actually quite high given his track history. He's been decent at a 1.5 miles so far this year, and his quality passes have been really good for a guy in this range. And his track history since 2014, 12th, 7th, 11th, 10th, 6th, 11th, that's just it inspires a lot of confidence. And I do think he'll go overlooked, like you said, to some extent with Kasey Kahne and Erik Jones kind of lurking back in the 30s. So, again, it's a strategy play. It comes down to how you're attacking this slate. But he's probably the best pure pivot in the field.
Yep. I mean, that's pretty much the definition of a pivot. Chris Buescher, not interested, starting 20th.
No, not interested.
AJ Allmendinger, starting 21st. Two straight 8th place finishes here. Wish it was a little bit lower so I could get on him because he burned everyone last week by just starting that, the big one. Just
Yeah.
with him being dumb. But kind of like the Dinger. 21st isn't the most, like I wouldn't play him in cash at that starting position, but at 6,200, he seems egregiously underpriced.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we can kind of echo what we said about Ryan Newman. I think AJ Allmendinger is a fine pivot.
He's a pimp.
Yeah, he's a fine pimp and a great pivot. But he's a if you believe he can get that top 10 like he has the last couple of races here, then he's a great play. And I think he can, man. He's been at least serviceable this year. Struggled a little at 1.5 miles, which gives me a bit of pause. His average running position is 22nd so far. His track history is enough to give me a little confidence to at least match the field. But definitely look into what he's done on 1.5 miles and what Chris Buescher has done at 1.5 miles so far this year. Those cars haven't been great.
Yeah, I will say that is 1.5 mile tracks are not Allmendinger's bread and butter. He's more for your short tracks, your road races.
Yeah, definitely.
Ty Dillon, 6,700, starting 22nd. He's, I guess, become a bit of a fan favorite, sort of. Like he's just looked awesome so far this year. Eight lead lap finishes, which is spectacular for someone down in this range. Are you on the Ty Dillon hype train? Have you been all year long?
I have been all year long. This week, I don't know if I am. Just because it comes back to that thing, and that's kind of the theme of this podcast. We can't say we like everybody.
Yeah.
I like Ty Dillon. There's a lot of guys I like better than him this week. So kind of make your own judgments on him. I don't think it's a bad play. It's just not one that I'm going to put a whole lot of stock into.
Should he be 500 more than Allmendinger? Probably not.
No, definitely not.
Matt DiBenedetto, starting 23rd. I love the guy. I just voted for him in the All-Star race. He's doing the thing on the NASCAR subreddit where he's letting them design his car if he makes it into the All-Star race. And so far, the submissions look pretty good. Love the guy. Hate the fact that he started 23rd. No thank you.
Yeah. No thank you. Then we go to Danica Patrick. No thank you.
Oh, yes, thank you. This is one of her better tracks.
Yeah, but still, I mean, starting 24th, what's she going to do, finish 16th?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just my girlfriend always makes me play Danica every week. She's like, you're not going to fade Danica, are you, you woman hater?
I think there's weeks to play Danica. I just don't think this is the week, even with her, you know, serviceable track history. I don't, wouldn't even call it great, but...
She's not 6,100 again. She is 6,900, which is a bit much.
Yeah, and that's a big thing about it is she's in the range of, you know, she's more expensive than Ryan Newman. She's in the same range as Trevor Bayne. I just don't have much interest in this play. I think the 1 7th place finish she has here is an outlier. Since then, it's been all 20s and a couple of low teens. Like I said, it's back to that old thing of you can't play everybody, and I definitely don't like this play.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you, I guess. You kind of talked me off the ledge there a bit. To quote the movie George of the Jungle, this range right here is where we throw our heads back and laugh. Ha 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 ha. Gray Golding starting 25th. Hell no. Cole Witt starting 26th with an abysmal track history here, and him not being great at 1.5s, and him just starting 26th. Hell no. Jeffrey Earnhardt 27th. Hell no. Cope 28th. Hell no. And then all the guys right underneath here, the ones who didn't take a qualifying lap. It's time to get into this smorgasbord, the 29 and lower club. Starting with Jimmy Johnson, 10,100, former winner here, just like pretty much every other track in NASCAR, but really good track history here. Starting 29th, pretty much a lock and load, same as last week.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to ignore Jimmy Johnson this week. I mean, even without a 29th place starting position, he's got a great track history here. He was fastest in 10 lap and second practice. If you ignore a couple outliers, fourth, third, and first in the last couple of years here, a 17th finish, which I'll have to go back and see what happened, but he's got a really great track history at Kansas. Been good on 1.5 miles so far this year. I just don't see any way around Jimmy Johnson this week.
If you remember back to spring of last year, Jimmy Johnson was perhaps the unluckiest man in the entire world. Like, he was getting, if he wasn't having mechanical failures, he was crashing, he was having pit problems. With all the penalties in this race, I'm pretty sure I remember him always getting sent back to the back of the pack. That's probably what happened there with the 17th place finish. Outside of that, he's awesome here. And he's right there with everyone else as an odds-on favorite to win. I think Kevin Harvick's actually the favorite at 5-1, but there is a huge group of people at 6-1. That includes Jimmy Johnson. Starting 29th, that's easy. You're just going to have to eat the chalk there. But luckily there are enough options to diversify yourself if you think something's going to happen to Jimmy Johnson. But it's pretty much the same as last week with him. Clint Bowyer, 8,600, starting 30th. Also very interesting here. For once, we look at his track history and we don't see a bunch of like top 15s. It's actually pretty poor. But Bowyer's been, I guess he's not been the best at these 1.5 mile tracks, but he's gotten a lot better as the season's progressed. Do you like Bowyer? Would you be more willing to go to some of these other like super obvious plays?
The only reason I like him is because of his starting position. Last year, I mean, we can pretty much write off because he had really bad equipment. The race before that, he wrecked, and then the race before that was a 21st place kind of mediocre run. So, if I'm gonna fade anybody in this range, it's gonna be Bowyer. I think the hype train on him has kind of started, and I think it'll probably slow down after this week because I don't see him doing a lot. Didn't impress that much so far. He doesn't have the fastest car out there by any means. Doesn't have the best ability at Kansas. And has only been sort of okay at 1.5 miles. He is a good play from a strategy perspective, just because he's starting 30th, and he'll finish much higher than that, most likely. But again, can't play everybody. So if I have to fade anybody down here, it's going to be Boyer. But with that said, I don't fade Boyer.
Well, I think I'm right there with you. He looks very, very good on the game logs, and we've seen the last few weeks his ownership is just spiked up.
Yeah, and I think it'll continue to do so this week, and I think that'll be the end of it, because like I said, I don't think he's going to have anything remarkable this week.
Maybe a 15th place finish, or hopefully crashes. But yeah, I'm more interested in the likes of remember the last race when this happened, and Kasey Kahne was the one that screwed everyone. Finished like almost dead last, starting in the back. But he's starting in 31st this week. Kane's kind of been an invisible man in what's obviously his final year at Hendricks. But 7,800, kind of the same price he's been all year. It's just a better track history than Boyer. Just starting 31st is the reason you would play him.
Yeah, and like you said, he does have a really notable track history here. Though Kasey Kahne kind of has a good track history everywhere. It's just kind of been recently he's fell off the boat. But starting 31st, I kind of see him as a top 10 contender pretty easily. I think he'll probably end up competing for a top 10 and maybe just kind of sneaking his way into the top 5 if things go right. But I love Kasey Kahne this week. I think he's probably the best play outside of Jimmy Johnson in this range.
I kind of don't think so. Only because he's by far the worst of every one of these guys. The good drivers that didn't take a lap. He's like by far the worst at late run speed. That's where he struggled a lot this season.
Yeah, he has mentioned in interviews before that his cars just seem to get super, super, super tight at the end of runs for whatever reason. It's something he's been working on, whether he's overdriving the cars or what it is. But yeah, that's a good point. There is reason to take pause in that. Starting 31st, if you drive it up to 7th and then fall back to 9th because you don't have late run speed, I'm okay with that. Give me the 9th place finish.
The guy I'm more interested in is the guy who's supposed to be everyone's darling by now, but has been crashing like crazy, like he's getting paid to crash, but it hasn't really even been his fault. It's just been tires blowing out or people running into him like last week. Eric Jones, who has an average finish here of 40th, because back in 2015 he was a replacement driver for. Do you remember who was a replacement driver for in that race?
Kyle Busch.
Oh yeah, duh, that's right. Kyle Busch, he broke his leg. Yep. So Jones has raced here before, finished last, but if you look at his average running position, it was 21st, so most likely he was in the teens. He had a lead lap and 7 fast laps.
When he wrecked in that race, he was running inside the top 5, if I remember correctly. He was running very, very well in Kyle Busch's car before he just kind of lost it off of turn 4 and hunked it into the wall and wrecked it.
So he's got to be super sneaky this week. I mean, obviously the game loggers won't like him at all, but he did end up practicing better than it looked like he would end up practicing, because he showed a little bit of struggle early on in practice, but kind of got it together. Did pretty well, top 10 in the 10-lap averages. Starting a bit lower than some of these other guys and less expensive than Kahne. I like Jones probably the best out of everyone of these 5 guys.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with it. The only thing that worries is he just wrecks so many race cars, and he's got to do a lot of passing this week. So he's definitely a high-risk play, but I do think he's a GPP-winning play because he's going to have that Martin Truex setup, and we know that Martin Truex setup is quick. So if he can get up into the top 5, I think he'll stay in the top 5 and compete, maybe even for a win. I'd be interested to go back, and I'll just quickly click over to your handy-dandy tab here, how he's done. There's one race here. He finished 15th in the Xfinity Series, but he's really good on 1.5 miles regardless. I agree. He's a great play.
And that leads us to the final one of these guys, because the rest of the guys that didn't take a lap are scrubs, but Dale Earnhardt Jr., who has had even worse luck than Jones lately. He's just had absolutely terrible luck all year long. But the one time we saw him put up a decent finish was at the last 1.5 mile in Texas. He looked pretty good, and his stats so far on the 1.5 miles have been formidable for all the trouble that he's gotten in. I kind of really like Dale Earnhardt Jr. He's very cheap at 8,300, and after he burned everyone that dared to play him last week, do you think that his name will still make him a coveted play at all, or do you think the concussion talk is kind of scaring everyone off, thinking that he's going to be driving scared and whatnot? I mean, the track history is here. He's pretty good. Just the only reason I could think of not to play him is either he's driving scared or just like he has a magical bad luck bug, sort of like Jimmy Johnson did last year.
Yeah, it's. I don't know what to make of Dale Earnhardt Jr. this week, just because I have a hard time predicting what his ownership is going to be like. You know, starting this low is definitely going to pump him up. And I don't know if at this point, if his name as the most popular driver is hurting him or helping him, because people are playing him just based on his name. But also people, you know, his struggles are much more documented than anybody else in the field. So from a casual player, do they see it from, oh, that's Dale Earnhardt Jr., he's popular, he must be good, or do they see it as, that's Dale Earnhardt Jr., he's been struggling, we know this?
Well, I think the casuals all played last week. The diehards are the ones playing Kansas.
That's true enough. So make that – but regardless, whatever you think of that.
He's still starting the lowest out of all of these strong drivers starting in the back.
Exactly. He's starting 33rd, so he doesn't need to do a whole lot. A top 10 will do it, and I think a top 10 isn't out of the realm of possibility by any means. So he's a really strong play. It's just a matter of I'm really perplexed by what his ownership's going to be.
I think I'm just going to go heavy with him and not worry about it.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to go heavy with most of the guys in this range.
Yeah. You could just put all five in a lineup and then put in whatever dominator you think is, well, no, I think when you put all five in a lineup, you have to put Blaney and hope he dominates, but maybe just fade one and put in your favorite dominator, and there you go.
You just gave away the cash lineup.
Oh, no. Definitely play Blaney and cash, guys, with those five. Don't even play cash this week, because everybody is going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on these guys, and then Blaney. Like, that lineup, I think that lineup's going to be like 40% of your cash game fields.
Yeah, it's gonna be chalky.
Yeah, I'm kind of skipping. I'm just playing GPP.
Yeah.
So moving on to David Reagan starting 34th. Not really too interested in a lot of the guys in the back of the field here, because like I had pointed out earlier, the optimal lineup pretty much never has these scrubs starting in the back, because not a lot of people crash. There's no point in surviving.
Yeah, the only one that I might have given credence to was Michael McDowell, who has been at least semi-impressive at 1.5 miles this year with an average running position of 25th. But he had engine troubles in practice, and that's all they said. So I don't know how severe they are and how much concern they have, so I'm going to be fading him completely just based on that. Everybody else, David Reagan, Castle, and definitely Sorensen, LaJoy, and Timmy Hill are full fades for me.
I actually like Castle a lot. Starting 36th is kind of low for him, and the $5,200 price tag is what makes him really intriguing. Michael McDowell, I'm with you. I'm fading him because he didn't even try in second practice. Like, that dude is having problems. Honestly, I thought he was replaced in the field with Long. I thought that at first, had to change it up a little bit. Like, I had no idea. Like, we should mention that there's one guy who's not in DraftKings this week that will be racing. Can you tell us a little about him?
You know, I don't know a whole lot about him. He got suspended 3 or 4 years ago for a violation, a very minor violation. That they charged him $250,000, and he's a backmarker. He couldn't pay it. They came to an agreement as early as last week that they settled it, and allowed him to race again. He doesn't have any significant equipment, and he's not going to be a factor at all.
Well, do you think he'll be a factor as far as Timmy Hill is concerned? Like, do you think that we'll have a tough battle for avoiding last place? You know, do you think Hill will finally be happy to have someone down there in his echelon? Because it seems like Earnhardt has kind of surpassed him a little bit. Poor little Hill has nobody to race against 15 laps down.
Yeah, no, I think if anything, it'll be a race to who can finish last. I wouldn't anticipate Carl Long finishing this race. It's his first race since, and I'm just checking now.
I think 2006. Last time he raced.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of DNQs. The last actual race he ran was 2006. Finished 41st at Bristol. So, yeah, you can pretty much, there's nothing.
You have to ignore him. You can't play him.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll be very contrarian. You'll have to hack the website.
Yeah, play him if you can. How's that sound?
Watch him pull a Buescher and win. That would just be hilarious.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on that.
Absolutely not, but do you have any interest in Castle whatsoever? Because he's, like, notably pretty decent at 1.5-mile tracks, and he's just very underpriced, starting 36th. Like, if you're going to play anyone, he'd make the most sense if you're not buying McDowell this week.
Yeah, if you needed to play anyone, it would be Castle, but I don't think we need a super punt like this.
Yeah, with the weird pricing up top and the guys in the $9,000 range.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to sprinkle him in a little at, 5 to 10%, just on the off chance. But like I said, I don't see a lot of lineups that I'm going to need a super pun like that. So that's the only reason I'm off him.
Yep. So Sorensen, LaJoy, Hill starting 37th, 38th, and 39th.
And all in on Carl Long. If you can, if you can't, just fade him completely.
Not sure. He costs quite a bit. A little too expensive at $0.
Going to be a very expensive play.
Okay, so that wraps things up here for Tacos Fast 40. Tell the guys about the articles that you're writing this week, as always.
Yeah, you can go back on Wednesday. I posted the competition caution article. Kind of goes over Kansas and what we can expect. We went over a lot of it today, so it's redundant. You don't need to bother with it, but what you do need to bother with is tomorrow afternoon-ish. I will release the sway bar, which is kind of my last-ditch overview of the weekend, who I think is going to be the top plays, who I think is going to be fades, who's going to be values. That's going to come out tomorrow afternoon, probably a couple hours before the race starts, or, I don't know what time it's going to come out, whenever I do it, but it'll be out tomorrow. You can check my Twitter for updates. I'll post it on Twitter as soon as I release it at Brady Miller DFS. And you can also keep up with us on the Slack forum, which we will be on all day tomorrow, except during my tea time, because I'm going golfing tomorrow. So,
oh, hell yeah.
Other than that, I'll be there all day.
I'll sleep in a little bit, but with it being a night race and all, but I'll definitely be there. I'll answer you guys' PMs. And if you would like access to our Slack chat and our coverage for every single major DFS sport, even some WNBA. We've got some WNBA content coming out, guys. We cover it all, I swear. I've got esports going. We're doing everything out here. So DFSArmy.com, one-stop shop for everything DFS. Definitely come be a part of the community. That's the best part of the entire membership. We're a pretty great team here. Come check us out, DFSArmy.com. If you choose to sign up, that's awesome. Use promo code TACO and definitely go check out Brady Miller's Sway Bar article. It's a must read every week. Very important. So that'll be it, guys. Good luck this week and hopefully come in first. No, hopefully you come in third. Me and Brady are going to come first in second, but you guys can take third. Still a nice take home.
Exactly.
All right. See you guys.
Bye, friends.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.